Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Scan Show, Stop Child Abuse Now, number 2401. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti, an advocate, counselor, and life coach from New Jersey, and I will be your host for this evening. So welcome. We encourage you to call in and be part of our panel. The number to call in is 646-595-2118. Again, that's 646-595-2118. Tonight, our special guest is Lang Martinez from Oxnard, California. He's a survivor of sexual abuse as a 17-year-old boy and a recovering addict who has lived a life of trauma with deep socio-emotional experiences. Now he's 55 years old, homeless advocate in Ventura County, just north of Los Angeles. Lang has struggled in his life with homelessness and incarceration, trying to seek meaning while hampered by a dysfunctional upbringing. Today, Lang is clean and sober. His homelessness ended when he made a personal commitment to seek a relationship with God and a promise to atone for his past transgressions. And it is also where Lang's life became interesting. And I'm going to stop there because I want to hear the interesting right from him. So we're going to go directly to Lang in California. Welcome, Lang.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm very honored to be on your show. And I'd like to say something to everybody that's been involved in my life. There's too many names, so I just want to tell all of you that have played a part to where my life is today, first of all, to God and to everybody that's been a part of on the journey with Lang. They call it the Lang Ride, and it's a ride.
Awesome. Well, we're very much looking forward to hearing your story. So how we're going to do it is I'm going to let you go for about 10 minutes, starting from your childhood and working your way up. And then at the 10-minute mark, we'll introduce the panel and see if they have any questions, and then we'll go back to your story and so forth and so on. How does that sound?
That'd be great, ma'am. Thank you. As I said, my name is Lang Martinez. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, my name is Lang. My name is Lang Martinez. When I was born, my mother was, when my mom got pregnant, she was 15 and a half. And during her pregnancy, she lost the most important thing in her life, and that was her mother. And my mom was married to a gentleman by the name of, his name was Martinez. And what's happened is I was basically an accident. And I remember the stories that I heard is my mom was very beautiful. And she went to Westchester High School. And she was, it's funny how this comes to play later. We'll get into that. My mom was walking down the street, and my father pulled over and said, "Would you like some candy, little girl?" And that's the story. And my mom ended up, getting in that car with my father. And what happened is she ended up getting pregnant. And because of the family itself, the Martinez's, he felt an obligation, and he married my mother. As I said, you know, at that time, my mom had her mother there, my great grandmother, and my mom was pregnant with me. And the story goes that my grandmother passed away.
Take your time.
And passed away. So, you know, my mom didn't think at that time, you know, how could God do this? And that's sort of like how my life's been, you know, how could God do this? And, you know, I heard stories about my mother going into the church and, you know, cussing out God. You know, why would you take my mom away from me? So growing up in the Martinez family and being a Martinez, you know, my father had expectations of my mother. My mother was beautiful due to the fact that after giving birth to me, she carried some excess weight. And my father was very vain and has a big ego. They tell me I got to work on mine. And my father would make my mom go outside, you know, do exercises, stuff like that. And he would put locks on the cupboards. And he would pull up in the driveway and bring other girls home to the house. And, you know, if he didn't do this, you know, this is what I'm going to do. So what happened is my mother had, at that time, my mom was taking care of my great-grandmother. And my mother decided that she wasn't going to accept this kind of abuse, and she took me and my great grandmother, and they got an apartment in Westchester. So what I will tell you is that my family is there. My family's a Martinez family. My father's name's Horacio, and they're connected. My great grandfather was connected to the Hispanic paper called the La Opinión, and that's a Hispanic publication that's now held by the LA Times. It's one of the largest Hispanic publication newspapers that I was told, and, you know, across the world, people know about the La Opinión. And so what happened is my mother left. So being the mother that she was and having me, she felt my mom looked for a dad is basically what she did. And my mom ended up bringing this gentleman. His name was Gary, and I was 1 year's old, 1.5 years old. And this gentleman took me in as his son. And, you know, we married my mom. So what happened is I ended up having the name Lang Huff, H-O-U-G-H. So that's where that took into play. Well, the one thing that my mom did was she wanted me to have a father. She wanted the best for me. You know, the Martinez family offered to adopt me. You know, they had money. Lang would be better off. You're too young. And my mom walked away from all that money because to her, I was the most important thing to her. But being a child, she wasn't, you know, she did her best, you know, as but she didn't know what to do. So she ended up marrying into a family of, they were animals and the Huffs. And they were, you know, a white family out of New York. Gary, my father, I'll refer to him. Horse is my real, but my father, will call him. My father's name's Gary, so that's my dad. I call him my dad. So what he did is he raised me, he treated me as a son. But the thing that I always knew something was wrong because the Huff family, They were involved in drinking alcohol, stuff like that. My father had no respect for his father. You know, what he did to his mother, you know, stuff like that. He was an alcoholic, beat her, cheated on her. So what happens, I saw a lot of violence growing up in the Huff family. But my father, he never put hands on my mother. You know, he worked full time, you know, and he made sure that we had the best. So I have a stepbrother and a stepsister, but they are my brother and sister. I never knew any difference. So going to the Huff family, you know, they would babysit me. You know, Grandpa would, that was Grandpa Stan, and my cousins would be there. And what happened is I would get abused, you know, and you know, they would come pick me up, and I'd say, "Mom, Dad, you know, Grandpa hit me. You know, Grandpa did this, Grandpa did that." He didn't do it to my cousins, but he did it to me. And, you know, there'd be a story behind it. Lang misbehaved and Lang didn't do that. But my mom was a protector, so she would state her mind. And, you know, after eventually I was no longer getting babysat by them. And I grew up that because they knew what they knew about me was, is They were a racist white family, and they knew that I was a Mexican, even though my mom's white. Mm. I'm still a Mexican. So growing up in that family, with the Huff family, the brothers and stuff like that, there was a lot of violence with the drinking. You know, when we grew up in race cars, stuff like that on dirt tracks. It was a place called it was called Ascot Park in Gardena. So the big thing was is Uncle Skip raced cars and, you know, build cars, and we'd go out there to the tracks and stuff like that. And, you know, if things didn't go right or something like that, you know, somebody did something to Uncle Skip, Skip would find a way to get back to him for even putting the car in the corner. And he was a violent man, and he caused a lot of pain in my life besides the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So to get on to the thing, when I was 11 years old, you know, my favorite cousin was my cousin Rodney. And at that time, you know, you had Tyco tracks and slot car tracks, and that was over in Inglewood. And I'd sit down, and we were there, and I'd be babysitting by Aunt Sandy. And my Aunt Sandy was beautiful, blonde hair, blue eyes, and typical Huff. You know, I didn't have any kids, you know, being 11 years old. You know, Aunt Sandy, I had a crush on Aunt Sandy, but this one day Aunt Sandy drank too much, and the mailman came, and Aunt Sandy said, Lang, you know, the mailman's Rodney's dad. And I said, I don't understand, Aunt Sandy. And, you know, my brother Gary, he's not your dad. Your name's Martinez. And it kind of went from there. So I remember getting in the car that day, and I said, Dad's not my dad, Aunt Sandy. And, you know, we'll talk. So what happened is we ended up getting home, and my dad talked to me and told me, you know, I was his son, and that he loved me, and that, you know, Horace wasn't my father. He was my father. Well, going through the years, you know, my father, you know, he taught me baseball. I was good in baseball. He spent time with me.
I'm going to stop you right there, Lang, because we have to go to the panel. So okay. I'm going to remember where you were, but we're going to shoot to the panel because they've been holding. Okay. We're going to go to my beautiful co-host, Joe, in Oregon. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thank you, Linda. Hi, Lang. It sounds like you've had quite a story from when you were a kid, growing up in different kinds of families and different backgrounds or different family life. So it sounded like it was a little bit of an adjustment as you come into, you know, a group that fights and versus the one that doesn't, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more of your story and also what you're doing now. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, we're going to go to Val in New Jersey. Hi, Val.
Hi, Linda. Hi, Lang. Welcome. I just wanted to tell you that what really stood out to me so far in your story is, for such a young girl, your mother sounds like quite a protector, and it sounds like she was trying to do her best beyond her years, actually. So I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of your story, but that's what stood out to me so far is your mom and her devotion to you and her attempt to protect you from harm. So thank you so much. I look forward to hearing more of your story too.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Val. That's a great point, Val. Yeah, your mom really loved you and wanted to protect you. Okay, Mary in Arkansas. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Linda. Hi, Lang. I'm from Alaska, not Arkansas.
A common mistake.
And,
I don't know my abbreviation.
That's okay. Almost everyone makes that mistake. So, I've spoken with Lang before and I've heard his story, and I do agree that his mom had to be an incredibly strong young woman to have a child at that age and to be put into such different family lives and mixing things up, which then created the chaos for you, Lang. And I too want to just listen to you as you continue with your story. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
It's a pleasure. I didn't know you were going to be on the show, Miss Evans. That's a gift in itself.
Well, thank you. I did message you that I would be here, and so I am here for you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
Thanks, Mary. Okay, we're going to go to Michael in Florida.
Hi, Linda, and hey, Lang. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Nervous.
Good, good. I can totally relate with your story. Definitely, you know, a lot of similarities. So, you know, I look forward to hearing you speak a little more and continue on. But it's very, 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 very interesting. So God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, now we're going to go to, we have a 917 area code, but we're not sure who that is. Hello? Can I ask who I'm speaking to? 917 area code? Okay,
oh, yeah,
we'll
that's
come
me.
Back
hi.
To you.
Oh, no, I'm good. Here. Hi. I'm just here to listen.
Who are you?
My name is Thomas. Thomas, also
okay.
from Florida. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just listening in, and I look forward to hearing more from people.
Thanks, Thomas. Okay, Lang. You know, I have to point this out. One thing you said that really stood out to me was when after your mom had you and your father was brutal towards her about her weight.
Yes, ma'am.
And I hadn't thought about that in a while, but the same exact thing happened to me. My son's father left me when he was 3 months old because I had put on weight and was no longer a trophy wife. So that really stood out to me. That was very traumatic for your mom. You may not have known it, but that's a hard thing to live through. So anyway, let's get you back to your story. I think it was after your aunt revealed who your real dad was.
Yeah, well, when that took place, you know, my mom being the protector, I'd like to go back to something. You know, one of the things
sure.
being one of the things working, I'll get to the story. One of the things working with Randy Boyd with Courageous Healers, and one of the things working with my therapist, one of the things about involved in the people that I'm involved with, I've been blessed. I have like a village. I have hundreds. I have a lot of people that support me all over. Is that I do have to take a look at some things. Is I have to understand that my mom did the best that she could, and she
yep.
only knew what she was taught. But there was some definite there was definitely some mistakes that were made, and you know I have to come to terms with that. But I have to understand that she did. No matter what happened, she did the best, you know, from what she knew, you know. So
right.
to go from the so what happened is all of a sudden I find out that I'm a Mexican. I mean, I don't look Mexican, but I have the name Martinez. And as soon as I came down, and that was made aware of, my mom didn't take no crap, so she kind of held court. I made it very clear that you know they were to keep their hands off me, and that seeing that now we know that I'm not one of them. I may be Gary, you know, my father's child, but I'm not a Huff, I'm a Martinez. And stuff started there, like from my Uncle Skip. He was a sick individual. And I was a taco bender. I was fat, so I was a bull in a china shop. I was a wetback. I was a beaner. I was called all kinds of names, you know, by him, you know. And what happened is, you know, I had a thing for motorcycles. Let me go back. So after that happened at 11 years old, there was stuff happening that my mom didn't approve of. And my Uncle Skip had he had some young guys that he hung around with. He had a body shop called Skip's Auto Body. And he had these two guys that would go around and they would steal motorhomes, car parts, stuff like that. And some of that stuff was put in our garage. And my mom was a little upset about that. That's the kind of things that Skip did. One day, Skip had a motorcycle himself. It was a big thing about motorcycles because his brother died on a motorcycle in Tijuana. It was hard to get the body back. You know, it would have been my Uncle Leroy. So one day, Skip pulled up on my driveway, and he fell off the bike that he was on, and he had scratches all over him. And he came in the house, and he said, "Gary," he said, "I killed three of them." And, you know, the term is the N-word and Negroes. And he said, I got three of them. And he said, take this. And it was a gun. And down there, his shop was located in Lenox. And at that time, he had a house. It was his house before he got a shop in Lenox. So he had the borderline Inglewood. Well, up there in Inglewood, you know, it was prominent. You had a lot of black neighborhoods. And you also had some bars and strip clubs over there on a boulevard called Hawthorne Boulevard. It was just kitty corner from Imperial Hawthorne Boulevard. And he said that he shot him. And he wasn't lying. And I remember they had to get him into the bathtub and wash him off. And my mom wasn't having this. And, you know, Skip had to, he left, you know, and then it was real bad. And then one of the times that happened, one of the times my grandfather, you know, my dad's dad, Stan, he passed away. He had a heart attack. Well, he had a machine shop. So it was a consensus that my grandfather's partner was stealing from the tool shop, from the machine shop. So what happened is the brothers got together and friends got together, and my dad had this Chevy. You know, my dad always had cars because of the body shop. We get cars, so we had a station wagon, bright yellow, had on the mad rims. You know, had the 350 black interior, and I remember we all got in the car and. My dad took off with us, and we ended up going to a location. It was a bar, and these other cars pulled up, and all these guys, you know, my uncles, people I knew, they got out of the car, and they went in that bar, and they took care of their business because they assumed that this gentleman ripped off, you know, my grandpa's stand. And I remember the screaming in the bar. And I remember them coming out and getting in the car, and I remember it must have been the barmaid. She came outside, and she was screaming and yelling that somebody call the police, call the ambulance. And, you know, we left that, and I was just a child. That happened. And then going on the journey, what happened is, you know, they didn't want us youngsters. You know, we had mini bikes. My Uncle Larry made sure the kids had mini bikes, but we took that up to Lake Isabella, and we'd ride mini bikes. You know, in the dirt, going back and up forth, you know, by the lake. That was Lake Isabella up at Wolford Heights. And they didn't want motorcycles. So as time goes on, you know, we're living at 94th Street, my great-grandmother there. So I got to bless my dad because he was there. He took care of my grandmother, you know. And he also, I don't know, we'll get to that. So I remember what happened was I was 15. I was 15 and a half, so you could have a permit to drive a bike. And I went to a friend's house, and he had a 175 like Yamaha Enduro. And his name was Don James. And he said, you know, $150 had a license plate on it. You know, it was an Enduro, you know, off-road, on-road, you know, in school at that time. And I pushed the bike home. And I pushed the bike up in the driveway. And I said, Dad, I said, Don only wants, I think it was $150, $175. Well, what happened is the neighbors next door, his name was Steve Hayward. He was a friend of mine. He came from Vietnam. And he had friends there, two friends there that were from Vietnam. And they were soldiers on the front line. And they liked to drink, and they'd out there, and they would play what they call mush ball. It's like a form of softball, but it's a big ball, and it's mushy. So when you hit it, it didn't take off. You know, you could play outside, so you'd be in front of the yard. And the kids would go out there, and we'd play with them, and they'd drink their Hennessy, you know, and they'd play mush ball. Well, Steve Hayward, you know, had a lot of respect, and he loved me. And Skip pulled up at that time. And when Skip pulled up, he saw the motorcycle on my great-grandmother, what was on, that was my mom's mom. She was on the porch, and Skip pulled up, and he said, Randy says, I got to work on my language. He said, you know, what are you doing? In other words, you know, that motorcycle, so-and-so. And he was calling me names and stuff like that. And then he attacked my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and Steve Hayward next door, he walked over, and he was about a 6 foot tall, 6 foot four tall guy. And Skip was a smaller guy. And Steve walked over and said, you know what, sir, Skip, you know what, you want to discipline the child, you got a problem with the motorcycle, you're not going to talk to the old lady like that. That's what you're not going to do. And Skip said, okay. So Skip got in the car, and they took off, and he came back with about eight guys. Well, now we got three Vietnam vets that he's coming back for. They're drunk. They're soldiers. They've been in combat.
Oh, boy.
And Skip gets out of the car, and you know, my dad, you know, being a Huff, one of the things, you know, brothers, you know, so my dad came down the stairs, and there's people out there. I'm standing out there, and one of the guys didn't have the mush ball. He had an actual softball, and he was throwing the ball, and instead of hitting Skip, it hit my dad in the side of the temple, and it crushed his temple into the side of his brain, and we had an emergency. So stuff went down. Steve ended up breaking Skip's nose, and ambulance came, police came, everybody's gone, and my dad ended up going to Daniel Freeman Hospital, and they didn't know if he was going to make it because the temple went in the brain, so they had to shave his head, go in, and they had to pull the bone away from it. So he was in Daniel Freeman. Well, Daniel Freeman's where my aunt worked. She was one of the chief of staffs there. My mom was in Grass Valley at this time, and what happened is phone calls were made for her to come back immediately, and we didn't think nothing of it. So he's in intensive care. I'm worried about my dad, and I'm home with my grandmother. And my Uncle Skip comes back, and he comes back. He's looking for me, and he has this knife. And back door, and he had me all the way against the back of the wall, and Steve saved me. Steve saved me and got him out of there. So the decision was made that that I go around the corner to a friend of his, Charlie and Darcy. Charlie was an ex-Vietnam vet, and my grandmother and I would stay there until my mom got back from Grass Valley. But seeing that that was my father, Daniel Freeman Hospital was quite a few miles away, so I ended up getting my friend late at night. And I knew better, but it wasn't going to stop me. And I went all the way to Daniel Freeman Hospital, and the Huff family was there in the lobby. And, you know, why am I there? I did this. It's not your father. My Uncle Skip was there. And then because my aunt was chief of staff, married to my uncle, my mom's brother, he ended up being there. And instead of saying anything or trying to protect me or sticking up for me, he didn't even give me – he told me that I didn't believe. And that was my Uncle Tom. Mm. So that happened to my family. So, you know, my dad was in a hospital.
Okay, let me stop you there, Ling. I'm going to stop you right there because you have to go to the panel again. But, Bob, you have endured a lot of trauma and a lot of violence and, you know, in a short amount of time when you were growing up. So that's really intense. But let's go to the panel and see if they have questions or comments. So we're going to go to Joe in Oregon, my lovely co-host.
Thank you. Yes, Lang, that is amazing, the amount of violence. And you were a young teenager at the time?
I was 15. Yeah, 15 years old.
Wow. Wow. And and so that's got to have sort of set in your mind about how things happen or how people take care of problems or something by attacking others and getting vengeance and stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, I'm. This is a really tough story, and I thank you for sharing it. And I know it's troubling sometime, but I appreciate you sharing it, and you're doing a good job. So I will listen for some more. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Thanks, Deb. Okay, Val in New Jersey.
I'm gasping as I'm listening to your story because I am just imagining the trauma you were going through. And what I was really thinking, truth is, you were steeped in trauma from the time you were conceived, honestly. And I just started thinking about how God had his hand on you. And I'm just so grateful for Steve. And I know there's more of the story, but for up until now in your story, I'm just imagining that he was the hand of God on you, helping to protect you, even though you went through so, so much. And I can only imagine your pain. And I'm just I'm just so glad you're here, honestly. And I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of your story. Thank you so much for sharing. I know it's very hard to share. It sounds very painful to share. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Val. And Val spoke on, I believe it was the 11th. That was last Monday, wasn't it? I believe it was last Monday. So let's go to Mary in Alaska. Hi, Mary.
Yes, Ling, I just want to say that you're doing a great job of telling your story, and I really admire you for, as a man, to come forward and share, because we often hear these sorts of stories from women. Your story is powerful, and I agree that you were in trouble even before you were born with all this violence. And I really admire, I get the feeling how you've respected not only your mom, but your great-grandmother, and that you, as a young boy, were put into a position that even adults can't handle, but you were there, you were there to be a part of those women's lives and what you had to endure from the violence of other men. It is amazing, and I do think, too, that God had a hand on you. God still has a hand on you, and he has a place for you to continue the work that you're doing. You're an amazing man, and I look forward to hearing more of your story, because I know that you still struggle, as we all do, and I think that's the thing that we have in our lives. When these things happen, but you have been a gift to humanity, and you're helping so many people. So thank you, and let's continue on with your story.
Yeah. So you want me to continue?
No, I have one more person to go to. I was just saying thanks to Mary, and we're going to go to Michael in Florida. Michael's going to be speaking in a couple weeks. So,
okay. You there, Linda?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Okay. Yeah, I tell you, Lang, I can really relate to the violence part. That reminds me so much of my story. I mean, I thought that getting hit was normal. So, you know, it didn't even affect me as I got older with the violence and things that I went through, which I'll be sharing in a couple of weeks. So I feel your pain growing up through that. You know, unfortunately, that violence carried on to, you know, with me, into me being violent with other people, you know, which, you know, has gotten me arrested quite a few times as well. And, you know, I that's the biggest thing that I can really relate to with you on that. You know, I can feel your pain, brother. But yeah, very interesting story. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, I'll let you take it now, Lang.
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as, you know, that happened when I was 15 and a half. So, you know, my dad came home and, you know, he tried to talk to me in regards to, you know, stay away from the neighbor and stuff like that, you know, and I didn't. So he ended up accepting that. So what's happened is, you know, going later in my life, you know, I was, you know, I never really belonged. I didn't know if I wasn't a Martinez. I wasn't a Huff. You know, I was just my mother's child, you know, my grandmother's, you know, my dad, you know, my dad, you know, skipped it a lot of stuff to me. And, you know, I remember that, you know, I'll jump ahead as, well, no, I won't. Well, so what happened is going that, you know, being in high school and stuff like that. Well, let me go back. Growing up and stuff like that, because of being a Martinez, what's happened is the Martinezes made sure that I did go to a parochial school, and I did go to Good Shepherd Lutheran School in Englewood. So I went to a private school, and my stepbrother and stepsister didn't. You know, I had things, nice clothes. You know, I had braces. You know, stuff like that. I had things that they didn't have. You know, even though, you know, he was paying his child support, it was only $150. But when I would go visit, you know, I did visit the family, my grandmother and grandfather, you know, and, you know, he spoke broken English, and I'd come out here to Thousand Oaks, and, you know, they lots of money and stuff like that. And when I would show up and stuff like that. There was lots of love once I found out, I was a Martinez, but, that ended. When I was in high school and stuff like that, even though I was a Martinez back in the day, because I was baptized under the name Huff, I was still Lang Huff. So, going to school and stuff like that, I was a loner. I had maybe one friend, two friends. And then the situation growing up in the beach area, I was heavy set. And being heavy set, Martinez is, I'm very transparent. The media knows that I tell my story and I'm accountable. Growing up as a Martinez, I was heavy set. I had man boobs. Martinez's did, So being able to go to the beach and stuff like that and, taking off your shirt or going surfing with the rest of the kids, that wasn't something that I liked to do. I wanted to be a part of it. So, I see Lang out there mm-hmm. with a T-shirt, and it wasn't really happening. The girl scene for me, I remember my mom had friends that had daughters, and I remember people telling me that, Lang, you have a beautiful face, and, you just got to, you got to work on your weight, honey, And I remember, my dad put me in flag football, and, if I could get the flag off the guy, it was a dollar. And I remember my dad, he'd take me over to the high school and stuff like that, too, and we would walk the track, or he would do incentives. He never made fun of me. He'd always be with me. He's the one that, taught me baseball. Mm. The one thing is that, in all things, a lot of things come into the light, working with my therapist, the lady I have in my life, she's a nurse, psychiatric nurse, Randy, the church and stuff like that. I have to look at things that they really are. Gary being my father, my brother's name's Eric, and Eric couldn't make the grade, so I was, I was like on a pedestal. I could play baseball, Lang could do this, Lang could do that, and Eric wasn't, my brother wasn't, he wasn't there. He was born slow. He had an IQ of 72. He belonged at special schools, but dad didn't want him that. So he was what they call borderline. But growing up like that, being myself and the way I am, I've been blessed. My brother wanted to be like Lang, so he knew how to try to, but he never succeeded, but it was him basically by not actually having his dad the way he should. Even though I'm getting the abuse from the Huffs, he's not. The whole situation was it was pretty manic, it was pretty manic, I mean, and then, going into high school and stuff like that, I ended up finding out, about losing weight. And at that time, 16 and a half, so like that, I start taking, there was a lot of weed going on and stuff like that. And I ended up taking, Black Beauties. So I remember, I lost the weight and I ended up finally meeting this girl. And she was a Jewish girl. Her name was Debbie Hope Fine. It was Debbie Hope Feingold, Debbie Dvorahia Feingold. And her being from a Jewish family, I didn't know, but I thought I was in love. And, I had a girlfriend, so I had to drive back and forth to the Valley. I had a 69 Chevelle. And that ended up, that's really where the story goes is, in my story, in my articles and stuff like that, I talk about, having sobriety 3 times 5 years. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, 12-step programs, stuff like that, I'm having 5 years 3 times, and that's quite an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. But see, because of the things that I've done, it's not an accomplishment, especially when that one story I wrote, God did. I my family came back to my life 3 times, and I destroyed them. My son's in pain today. But to go back is... having the 5 years 3 times, I never understood the pain. The gentleman was talking about mm-hmm. incarcerated. Well, in one of my articles, it talks about keys of recovery and local. I talk about having sobriety 3 times, and I always get asked the question, and I still get asked the question today, why the 5 years? And I said, because of the pain. Well, I really didn't mm-hmm. know what the pain was until my last mm-hmm. relapse, and. That's where the pain came in is I ended up, after another 5 years, I ended up homeless, in Oxnard. And then from Oxnard, I ended up, homeless in LA. And, I was down there on 40th in Vermont, 40th and, I was on Vernon and Western, a place called First to Serve. And it was, you know, it was a shelter situation. It wasn't a program. And what's happened is right there, because, you know, I want to go back to the gentleman told me I want to be incarcerated. Yeah, I've spent 15 years in prison. Yes, I've had four prison numbers. So what happened is I ended up homeless out there, and I had people in my life that wanted me to get help, and I was foaming at the mouth. I was seizuring. Prior to that, I've had flesh-eating disease in my right leg. I still see the scars. I've had renal failures. At this time in L.A., I was dying. And what's happened is because of the craziness, then what's happened is it was stuck in my mind what happened to me. And what happened to me when I was 17 years old is I was molested. I was raped. And in regards to, before any questions get asked, I just got my story and that I talk about, and I wrote that story. I had to. It's called The Truth Nobody Knows, and it was picked up by the local paper out here, Citizens Journal, and I owe him everything, George Miller. And what's happened is they said it was too graphic and a man telling the story. And as far as that article, I can't get into the particulars, but in regard to that, you know, Keys to Recovery ended up picking that up. And what's happened is my story goes back to the 1980s, and my story goes to a place that, I saw what you did. I saw with my own two eyes. You know, you can wipe off that grin because I know where you've been, and it's all been a pack of lies. You know, I wrote that in an article, and I was at a place in 1980. And as Randy wrote, we had to keep it quiet. And it was a famous place, and the story's never been told about that one. But it was an evil place, and it was the devil's lair. And, you know, the stuff going on with Corey Feldman, my story, his story is the truth, the two Coreys. My story is the truth, a lot of Langs. And I do have to make some things clear before we go any further, that I am represented by counsel. I do have an attorney, so I don't want to get into specifics. Just that the fact is that things are to come as far as a lot of stuff that took place, things that will be exposed, and it has to be handled in a proper fashion. So I apologize to the guest. What we can discuss is that I was molested at 17, and it was a rape by force with a threat to do bodily harm to my family. That's all I can get into.
And that's fine. And we're gonna stop there anyhow. But you have an attorney for that case, so we're not gonna discuss the specifics of that case. That's what you're saying, right? Correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Great. Okay. We're gonna go to my beautiful co-host Joe in Oregon.
Hi. Thank you. Lang. I can totally understand about not talking about an active case. The homeless, were you by yourself? I was trying to just figure out whether you were by yourself or if you had some friends that you knew that you could make sort of a group and protect yourself that way.
Well, you're talking about with the homeless situation when I was homeless?
With the homeless situation, yeah.
Yeah, in regards to the homeless situation, I stayed by myself. I was fortunate enough that in Citizens Journal, I wrote the it's called Nobody Knows But Me One, and I talked about the things that I did and about trusting no one. The rules of homelessness in Ventura County are quite different than L.A. In L.A. it's a whole different monster. In L.A. The rule is that you have somebody, and when you go to sleep, you know, after you're done doing your meth or whatever you do when you go to sleep, you do have somebody. I wasn't there. I was mostly out here in Ventura. Mm-hmm. So in L.A., because of being on the yard and knowing how the rules go, you know, and I was able to write those stories, enlighten Ventura County on the real truth of what really happens in the homeless encampments. See, in L.A., there's a rule there. It's called one up, one down. That means when you go down, that means you have one up and he's keeping point. And the other rule is being laced up. Laced up is out here in Ventura County. They walk around in their sandals and flip-flops or whatever. L.A. County, you're never caught. There's a term, you're never caught slipping. You always have your shoes on. So that term is called being laced up at all times.
Uh-huh.
So it's quite different, you know, as far as the situation. to go to the story as far as the homelessness, being homeless. I try to hold on to some values. I kept clean. I stole. Mm-hmm. I talked about that. I stole from 99-cent stores and just stuff like that. Body wash, socks, underwear. Because I had to go out and get my poison, and I did petty thefts. I couldn't afford to do a felony because with my record, I'd be looking at a long time. With what they call prior addictions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is I stayed out here by myself in Ventura County in Oxnard, and what I wrote was is trust, trust no one. And that was basically designated for Ventura County, and that was my story. Because where I come from, and because of the violence being a huff and being on a prison yard, et cetera, the rule is if you take something from me, I there's consequences from it. And being caught up in the methamphetamine and the psychosis, and I knew me, and then if you did something to me or stole from me, something would have to happen. I was just embedded in me. I couldn't let you steal from me. So like I said, I was out there on 40th and Vernon, and I was foaming at the mouth, and I was seizuring, and I called a gentleman by the name of Keith Wupal. And another gentleman, I know he's listed, his name's Ruben Chavez. I broke his anonymity, I'm sorry. And what's happened is I called Keith and I said, Keith, I got to get help, I'm dying. And he said, you got to get help. And I said, something's wrong. I said, I got stuff. He goes, where are you going to go? And I told him five places. And this is where God comes into effect. So I told Keith, I said, I'm going to get into acting, all these different programs, and you better get somewhere, Lang, you're going to die. And I said, I know, Keith. And I ended up making the phone calls. There was other programs that turned me down. God knew that I wasn't finished. And I ended up in a place called Acton. And I made a phone call. I tried to get a hold of Keith. And the pay folks, it's an L.A. County program. And I knew I had to have another foundation. I knew I had to learn how to learn. I knew that I didn't know how to live life on its terms. Having sobriety 3 times 5 years and being in recovery, I knew I had to go back to square one. And I just remembered that I had a bed, and I said, God, I said, I'm begging you. I said, please save my life this last time, and I'll give it all back to you. And I had people that helped me, and I ended up getting to act. And when I got to act, they said I was one of the worst cases there. And what happened was I tried to get a hold of Keith, and I ended up getting a hold of Ruben. And I said, hey, Ruben, I said, it's Lang. And Ruben said, and Keith's a man of God. I said, hey, Ruben, it's Lang. He goes, hey, how you doing? He says, how's acting? I said, I didn't tell nobody. He said, Keith said you'd be an actor. I never told Keith. He goes, yeah. He goes, we're coming up next week, homie. He goes, we're going to speak on a panel, and we're going to drive up there and tell him we came up there 2 hours for Lang Martinez. He goes, we'll see you next week. And, So I ended up doing the program and acting. And then the gentleman that saved my life in Oxnard, Ron Freeman, right, I ended up, he came and visited me when I had visiting, and I came back here. And when I came back here, I was in his office, and I was right across the street from Plaza Park in the area. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, I saw the homeless and stuff where I was. Well, prior to this, I was homeless, and I'd stay at the churches. You see, I'd be at the church, I'd clean up the mess. I didn't do the things that people did because it was, it was God, but I lost God. And I remember, pastors would come out and tell me, you have 30 seconds. I said, well, geez, why would you want to call the cops on me? I said, dude, there's a reason. And they'd give me something to eat. Well, I ended up going to this one church, Dove Ministries, and his name's Pastor Gill. And I walked up, and I talked to him. He let me in the bathroom. He wasn't worried about me using. I was washing up. He was knocking on the door. And I came out of the bathroom, and he gave me a sandwich, and he gave me his socks, and he gave me his hairbrush. And I had warrants at the time. I thought I did. And he was talking to me, and he was out there in the back of Dumb Ministries, and he was painting. And he said, there's no God. And he said, Lang, just look up. And that was prior to me getting right. So when I came back, I ended up going to Dumb Ministries, and I saw Pastor Gill. I'm part of Dumb Ministries. And I saw Pastor Gill. And he says, he goes, I got to tell you something. I said, he goes, I ran across 100 people. And he says, I got to tell you something, Lang. I go, what's that? He goes, I prayed for you that day that I'd come across somebody like you. I said, did you think I'd come back? He goes, yeah, I thought you'd come back. Well, the story goes is that I was at the office I work at. It was across the street where the homeless are. And that's where everybody knows my advocacy is in Ventura, Oxnard. So what happened is Pastor Gil came outside, and we were looking at the homeless, and he looked at me, and he said, take a look, Lang. He said, that's you. He goes, you're the voice. You're God's voice. He goes, that's your calling.
Mm.
I said, no way.
Wow.
Well, when I was in the office, what happened is it kind of went fast. A gentleman came in and said that we're having a plan for the homeless, and he said, it's a 5-year plan. I said, well, what's the plan? He said, well, you know, I was wearing a suit, you know, I look different. He said, the plan is, I think we should take them and put them on a bus. I said, you're stupid. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I used to be homeless. I said, I'm lying. And he said, would you speak at council? So the first time I spoke at council was, I think it was February 24th. And, but prior to that, the cops would come and ask me, why are you different, Lang? How come you? So I started my advocacy there. I spoke in front of the panel. They wanted me to be a commissioner. And then there was a gentleman that believed in me. He was part of the city of Oxnard. His name's Mark Alvarado. I know he's listening. He no longer works for the city of Oxnard. He was part of the housing authority and did outreach with the homeless. And he asked me to speak on a panel on May 9th called Humanizing the Homelessness in Oxnard. And, you know, I still have the movements and stuff like that. I've done it to myself. God's blessed me. You know, he's given me my life back, and I've been blessed. So I ended up speaking on a panel with high city officials, and I was you know, the chief of police. You know, I had housing. I had high ranking officials, and there was people like 200 people there, and I spoke on that panel. There was something that was done, and I remember I got the attention of a lot of people. They were talking about housing and jobs, and it was a Q&A, and the gentleman came. I think it was the chief of police or somebody said something about housing and jobs and housing. And I said, Lang, what's your opinion on that? I go, I apologize, but my comment to that is blah, blah, blah. And the crowd started laughing. And after I did that, I had a woman in my life. Her name was, she's part of the homeless. Her name's Peggy Rivera. She sits on the chair of homelessness. And she introduced me to George Miller, Citizens Journal, and what's happened is George Miller and I met, and I wrote Nobody Knows But Me. My first article went out on May 24th, so it's been a little bit this year. I mean, as far as by God's grace, as far as what I do, as far as my advocacy and what they say about me, I've been very blessed. I think they talk about me being the first person ever out of Ventura and Santa Barbara that's come out of the situation to make a noise across the board. Said it's been me. So that's what I you know, that's what I advocate. So, you know, in regards to the abuse and stuff like that, working with you know, learning a lot of things, being in therapy, stuff like that, having people in my life, and you know, I got people over to write, and I take a lot of guidance. One of the things that my advocacy was for the homeless. Is for the homeless. I'm an advocate of accountability. I believe you have to be accountable. I believe that sometimes a hand up is a hand down. But through my experience with the child abuse, the rape, sexual abuse, the abuse, Randy taught me some things that I wasn't aware of because I'm a member of a program, a 12-step program, and it's something that's not talked about. So what's happened is Randy enlightened me that I think he said one in six men have suffered from sexual abuse, you know, and the numbers are lower for women. And the fact is, he says, Lang, he says, you know, your advocacy is you don't know this, but I'm going to tell you something. They don't want to talk about it on the program, that at least 80% of you men are higher that are caught up in addiction or in rehabilitation. 80% of you have been sexually abused or raped like you.
Yes.
And so what happened is being a part of the 12-step program, and you know, I work with a lot of people, and you know, in regards to the program itself, I'm very controversial. You know, the first step says my life is manageable out of because of alcohol and drugs. My life became, that's incorrect. See, my life was unmanageable before that. You know, that's why I did the drugs and alcohol. And the second step says, came and believe that a power greater than yourself could restore me to sanity. Well, you know what? You took me off that. You took me off my drugs, my alcohol, my methamphetamine, and the insanity really kicked in. You know what I mean? And then because of the fact that what happened to me is a regression memory. You know, all the stuff from childhood and everything. So, you know, when I talked to Randy, he says, how are you doing today? He goes, you know, what's your level of pain today? And I said, geez, we're peaking at 10, Randy. He goes, okay. You know, but I have a good support group. You know, I've had lots of miracles in my life. You know, for instance, I know she's one of the a nurse that knew me at my worst, that knew me at my worst. When I had the renal failure and I had the infection, and I was homeless, and they transported me to a hospital. I mean, they transported me to a place, aftercare, because I had a catheter. It was called Pathways, and I remember they pulled me there, and the lady that came down was a nurse, and I had an attitude, and she said, "You can just go ahead and leave, Mr. Martinez. I don't need your shit." And I came in there, and she took care of me. What happened is I could leave, and I was out of my mind, and I asked for help. And she called the crisis team, and somebody there called the homeless police, and they ended up arresting me. But before that took place, this lady would talk to me, and she'd tell me that God hasn't left me. There's something for you, Lang. You should write. You know, you got to write this book. You know, and stuff like that. And and she wrote some articles with me because I tell the truth. You know, in regards to service providers, what they did. You know, I make sure that I have my facts right. And she wrote those articles with me. Her name's Bonnie Rhoda, and she's a Ventura County nurse. She works in psychiatric. She works with people with special needs. She's an angel. So when I got out of the program, I wanted to see her and tell her that I could do it. And what's happened is I ended up getting something on my messenger. And I haven't been in a relationship since 2007. I mean, and I wasn't that kind of homeless person. And today I have a relationship with that nurse, and she comes with a beautiful 5-year-old daughter, and God's given me a second chance, you know. So God,
that's great. And I probably should let others ask questions too, but I really appreciate you sharing like that, and want to continue with that. But thank you so much. Wow, you've got a lot that you're giving to people, to others. Thank you.
That's right.
Joe, boy, you've got a question. I got a big response.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to Val in New Jersey.
Lang, I am just amazed. I'm amazed because you have been so rescued, and it is, I can just envision that rescue. And just looking at all the people that were planted at the perfect time in your life to be the touchstones leading you towards getting your life back on track and finding God and finding security and finding healing. And I'm telling you, I cannot believe how fast that turnaround was. I'm sure it was very difficult, but I am amazed at how quickly you were able to, with help, I know, you were surrounded, but to turn your pain into purpose. And something that I'm amazed at is the detail. You've had so much trauma, and I don't know how much trauma work you've done in therapy. I'm sure a lot. But with me and my trauma, I have blank spots, and I can't remember things, and all around trauma. The detail that you have is amazing, and I know that it's used to help other people. I know it because you can just hear it. You can hear how God is using you. And people that you're helping, they know you really get it. You know. You lived it. And I'm just so grateful for your faithfulness all throughout. It's amazing. Right. And I'm so grateful for you to have that relationship that you have right now. I think that's what a beautiful gift. Truly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Val. Okay, we're going to go to Mary in Alaska. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I
I am overwhelmed with hearing your story, Lang. And one of the things that is really feels profound for me is that you lack education in the sense that going to school, but your experience is extraordinary in your ability to share your story and to help others in a way that only you or anyone who goes through life like you have is your life experiences. And wow. I was wondering about your incarceration. You may have talked about that, but I may have missed what you said. You ended up being incarcerated, and what things caused you to be incarcerated? And what were the experiences that came out of that?
Well, you know, the experiences that came out of that is, even though I have the name Martinez, being half Mexican, I was raised white, but I did grow up partially in Inglewood. So when I got my first, I just want to make it clear to everybody, my crimes are petty thefts. And back in the day, petty thefts with a prior would get you a prison sentence. So, I boosted for like stores, and my original addiction was crack cocaine. So what happened is, I would go to any length to get that. So I was a petty theft. My felonies are petty thefts with priors, stuff like that. So my first one that I did, it ended up, I was looking at prison time. That was in 1986, and I had to learn the rules, and I was in L.A. County. And what's happened is they had a place called 9500, and I knew I was going to go to prison. But I spent some time in Inglewood. I hung around with a few of the Hispanic guys, stuff like that, and they're from the neighborhood. And I remember some black guy came up to me, and I knew it was all bad, and I was alone. And the guy walked up to me, he said, back then, you had in L.A. County, you could have what they call a wet 40. You could have 40 cash, and you could have on your own tennis shoes. And I had a pair of the blue Nikes with the white swoosh, the suede, the old school ones. And black guy walked up to me and he said, "Hey man, can I get you anything?" And the rules are you don't take anything from the blacks. And I said, "Okay." He said, "By the way, what size are your shoes?" And I said, 10 and a half. And well, the rule is you tell them it's my size and you just get up and start swinging. They're going to get them anyways. What happened is there was a guy across the way, and he was from what they call, his name was Sparrow, and he was from Cherry Street. And he was an older guy, what they call an OG. And he said, "I heard you say your name was Martinez." He said, "Come over here." And he saw my paperwork and knew I was going to go to prison. So what happened is I told him I was from Inglewood. I grew up in Inglewood. I lied about being from somewhere that I wasn't. And so what happened is he took me under his wings. So those black guys ended up coming back, and they came back deep because this is what they did to the whites. So I was sitting with him by his bunk, and it was crowded. And he got up, and he spoke for me, and they didn't bother me. But what happened is I thought I was in a family. I figured I belong. I'm a homie. I'm being from a neighborhood, which I wasn't. I knew how to lie so everybody can hear this. So what happened, I was considered a resident. But he said I was a homie, so it made me different. So what's happened is, the homies, we roll together. They say, no estate too solo way. That means you come at one, you come at all of us. And I figured I came to a family, I belonged. Well, what's happened is I ended up going to prison, and I had to learn some rules. And when I went to prison, I went to Soledad. And what's happened is as soon as I got there, some stuff happened. I went in the cell, and I ended up going to the yard and stuff like that. And what's happened, I never shaved my head. There's no tattoos on me. And what's happened is as I learned the definition, and we're going to get in next, because I know Ruben's like my big homie. He's from the same place, so I know he's out there. It's one of the, what's happened is, why didn't you shave your head? How come you don't have your name on you? And I got a smart mouth. I said, "Geez, homie." I said, "You guys shave your head. You wear tight t-shirts. You put your neighborhood on your eye. You got your lady's name on your neck, and you probably got 100 ladies." And I said, "You guys talk about the blacks looking like." I said, "All you guys look like, yeah." And I'd have to end up fighting. I got beat up, but I didn't want to change. Well, I found out that I ended up being a part of a pack of wolves, You know, there's no such thing as, you know, that, you know, being a Southsider, you earn it. You're called a Sereno, and there is no homie love. You know, they talk about make a homie, don't break a homie, and that's all lies. You know, Randy and I, and to be there will be a there will be a book, and it's going to hit on a lot of things. And one of the things is talking about that, about the yard. I can only go so far with what I talk about, but you know, talks about being united, not divided, and you know, that race and the neighborhoods and stuff like that are very much divided. And you know, I mess with some big people. I know I mess with somebody who's big in the entertainment field, and you know, I'm gonna tell the truth about that. You know, about that life. You know, I put myself right back in a pack of animals. I seen a lot of stuff, and I remember one day there was this guy, and I don't care. There was this guy, and I can't remember his name. There was this young guy, and he was selling heroin on the yard. Well, I didn't mess with drugs because that was a rule you didn't do. And what's happened is his hand was swollen, and I was in my cell, and his name was Bronco. Yeah, Bronco. He came in my cell, and he said, "Hey, what's up?" And I said, "Hey, man, what are you doing here? What's wrong with your hand?" I said, "I showed love because I always said that I was different. My nickname was Weddle," and they said, "Weddle's a little different. I got emotions. I cry." So that showed a weakness to them. You know, right away, it showed a weakness. So what happened is he came into my cell, and he said, "Hey," I talked about his hand. I said, "Hey, you know, I knew the terms I learned." And I said, "You know, you keep doing that." I said, "You're not going to be able to do what you do on the yard and, you know, take care of the other people." And I said, "You keep doing that." I go, they're going to roll you up, you know, because you're basically telling on yourself. You know, you should be about the money. I knew the slug. I really did. You know, I liked him. And what happened is he said, "I got bad news for you." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he pulls out a knife. It's called, you know, Turnport Pilero. He pulled out a piece, and he says, I came here to take you off the yard." I said, "What are you talking about, man?" He says, "The homies made a decision that if anything went down, you wouldn't be any good to us." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he says, I'm sorry." And then all of a sudden he was gonna shank me. It's in the terms called whack. And he said, "And by the way," he goes, "I understand that you know numbers. You can remember numbers." And I said, "Yeah, I know numbers." So what happens is on the yard, what they do is they sell their drugs, and what they do is they're called papers. And what you do is you do what they call a mail out. When you do a mail out to your family, it goes on a wire, and there's 10 sets of numbers. And when you get those numbers, you know when the money's hit. So when the dope came in, you know, the eagle landed, and when the money hit, you know, it's arrived. So what's happened is people don't have that kind of money in the yard. So what's happened is people use their families and stuff, and they say, "Hey, I need $100, I need $50, and stuff like that. You know, can you do a wire?" So what's happened is I became useful to those people on the yard, and I became an asset to them, to where I ended up being protected by people that were major players at that time.
Lang, I got to stop you there because we have to go to the rest of the panel. We're really getting low on time.
Yeah.
So I want to thank Mary, and we're going to go next to Thomas in Florida.
Yeah.
Thomas, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have any comments or questions?
Yeah, I like this. He mentioned this, you know, finding, I guess you call it God, a power greater than yourself. I mean, for me, a power greater than myself is the solution to all of my problems today. I would be really curious to hear more about that, how it works in your life for you.
Yeah. Well, how it works for me is, how it works for me is when I called out, I called out to, for me, you know, I called out to the one true God, my Lord and Savior, His Son died on the cross for my sins, and when I made that promise to Him, and I got to Atkin, I'm no longer that same person. I struggled for many years. I don't think about using. It's the farthest thing from my mind. I don't go into a situation I identify as an alcoholic or an addict. I'm recovering, and that's what I do. I do a lot of praying, and not as much as I should. I try keeping my promise by giving back to others and just sharing my story. What I did is, a gentleman by the name of Mark Alvarado told me a story, and he worked with children, and there were children that were abused. And the story goes is that he had a classroom, and he said, "I want you all to hold out your hand and make a tight fist." And he says, "I want you to think real hard, and I want you to lift one finger up for one person that has your back." And Mark told me that they didn't lift any fingers, and it made him cry. And that's the same situation and for us in abuse, for myself, for people in the program, people that are homeless. That's why I've taken that advocacy, because see, with the stuff that happens to us, we grow up with this picture of this blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. He parts the sea, turns water into wine, the loaves in the thousands, walks on the water, but this guy couldn't protect me. So what I advocate is that if you're alive today and you want to do something about it, God's already been there and he's working for you. I have to understand that, God's not the cause of my problem. It's self-will and it's sin. The stuff happened to me, but I'm here today. And as, Mary and the others said, God's had his hand on me, in regards to what I do. If I can just have a minute, because I don't want to talk about my advocacy and stuff like that, working with Randy, is that when you go into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I love the steps. I do the, the person I work with is a member, Ruben, and the thing with the program is this 12 steps are beautiful. I mean, you got to go back to when they were originated from. I also work, I believe I'm starting to get into Celebration of Recovery that Randy Boyd's involved in. But my advocacy is just to be able to go out there and talk to somebody and tell them about what God did for me. And the people out here in Ventura, they remember me. And, they ask me, I go into some dangerous places, and they say, "Lang, do you pray with them?" And I say, "Hell no. I pray before I go in." Shit, I go down to river bottoms and encampments. So those people that are out there are just like people like me that have been through what I've been through. And I just try to tell them that that there is a life and that God didn't abandon you. You're still here. And I try to have that conversation. My advocacy in regards to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, NA, or anything like that, I don't love all of it. I love the 12 step, the practice, the steps, the principles. But the one thing about the program is I tried it 3 times 5 years, is that you have to do more work. You have to be involved in recovery. I mean, as far as understanding the underlying issues, your life became unmanageable, alcohol or drugs. That's not true. You have to understand why your life was unmanageable. Why did you do the drugs? And with the insanity, the first two steps, and a lot of programs say they're 12 steps. Well, the third step gets into the God, and we already know about the two steps are no brainers. So you gotta get into that third step if you really want the recovery, and you gotta whatever you believe in, God bless you, but you gotta get into this. You gotta believe in something, and I choose God, and you have to believe in Him, all powerful. That can take this away, and he can give me a life over and beyond my wildest dreams. And that he takes people like us that are broken, and he uses us as disciples. And that's the story, and that's what I try to advocate or what I write about.
Absolutely, absolutely, very good. Okay, we got one more person. It's a 561 area code. Who am I speaking with? 561?
Denise.
Okay. Hi, Denise.
Hi. How are you?
Okay. Do you have any comments or questions?
I'm here just to listen at the moment.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, we'll come back. Thanks.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, Lang, we have less than 15 minutes left. Actually, we have probably about 13 minutes left. So
yeah. What
would you like to say to the listeners, and how do you want to finish off your story?
Well, in regards, I just want to tell those that are listening, men or women, mostly men, you know, I work with Randy, is that, you know, Randy talks to me. I have a lot of things that are coming, you know. My lawyer sat down with me, and he said, you know, Lang, it's not a perfect world. And he said, it hasn't been perfect for you. And he says, what do you want? And I said, I want it all, Ruben. And he says, I said, are you in? And he says, you know, I'm in. And, you know, what I do with what's coming and, you know, it talks about in Matthew, it talks about what's been in the darkness, you know, will be brought to the light. And that's where I'm at right now. That's where I'm going. In regards to the situation out here, I do have to say something. Is in regards to what's going on out here in Ventura County, I've been involved in I work with, you know, I'm invited to the meetings with all the top officials. And what's going on is Ventura County has different areas like Oxnard, stuff like that. I'm in Oxnard right now. And in Oxnard, we have the highest population of homelessness. And we had a facility that closed down that health services that worked with homeless called Community Action. And right now I'm working with I'm trying to work with official and advocates. The people out here, you know, homelessness is, there's a cause and effect. And out here in Oxnard, there's been no services for them since March 27th. And I'm making that statement.
Wow.
They haven't had showers. There's been no hygiene, no bathrooms.
Wow.
I'm working on that right now with Penny Rivera and others. Just on the humanity part, you know, the women right now haven't had any type of things in regards to what they need as far as their hygiene. But, you know, that's going out here in Oxnard. So, you know, I'm on that. You know, we're working on that real hard. I'm working with a guy named Rick. I'm working with a lot of officials, Peggy Rivera, and I'm trying to get into that. What I would like to say before we end is I need to tell the truth about something. Right. In regards to my relationship, I have a relationship with a beautiful lady that loves me. This time she doesn't like me. And I put myself back into a sober living. And I want to tell you why. I could have made a phone call. I could have went anywhere. And the sober living I'm at is, you know, it's back in Oxnard where the homeless are, back in my advocacy. But the reason why I came here in my relationship is I want to make it known to a lot of people that, you know, the city officials asked me something about me, you know, because I come on strong, you know, I'm hard. But I said at the end of the day, you know, I tell Mrs. Caruth or these other people, and I tell Randy at the end of the day, I go, I got to sit with Lang. And I got to understand that I'm messed up. I'm going through a lot, and I've been walking in the woods. I'm actually 56 years old, and I've been walking in the woods for 55 years. I'm not going to find my way home in 2 years. So what's happened in my situation and in my relationship with Bonnie and is in recovery, it becomes selfish. It becomes me. You become narcissistic. And what's happened is I want the people to know that even though I've done these things and they're great accomplishments, that the gift that God's given me by the second chance, that I have to take a look back at myself and see the things that I'm not there yet. So what God's given me can be taken. So because of this woman loving me, she said, hey, you got to take a look at yourself. And right now, you know what? I don't want to be with you. I love you. I know you can change. But right now, Lang, you got to work on you. You have a lot of stuff going on, and it's affecting me. See, the stuff that we've been through, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. And what's happened is we affect others, you know. The same shit that's to say, I apologize.
Yeah.
Sorry. The same stuff that's been done to me, I do it to her. And nobody deserves it. I don't do it on purpose.
No.
But then again, how can you, I know that my world wouldn't exist unless I had her and her daughter. But I do know that, I do know, and I'm able to take a look at it, and I listen to the direction that, hey, Lang, you know, maybe she's telling you the truth, and I know she is. So I came back to the situation here where I could be around other guys, maybe help them, but to work on Lang, you know, and I do that. You know, Randy talks to me all the time, and he says, you know, Lang, you got a lot of things coming fast. You know where where you're going, and we know we want to show the world, you know, a new Lang. He uses a different word, and I said, you know, I said Randy, I said, you know, wherever we're going, and I think I mentioned something to Mary. Mary mentioned something about sharing the stage or something one time when we first met. I got a hold of her and said, yeah, I want to go this. No, I'm joking. And Randy says, you know what, you know, people want to see a new thing. I said, well, you know what, Randy, whatever's coming and it's coming fast. I said, you know what. If you put me on the stage, I said, everybody's going to have to come with me. And I said, Mary's going to have to come too, because they start asking me questions. I go, you're not going to get a reformed Lang. You're going to get an honest Lang. And an honest Lang is this. Mm-hmm. I'm angry. I'm angry about the individual that did this to me. I have bad thoughts in my head, which I'd like to see happen to him. But I work with Randy to try to get to the other side. You know, courageous healer Randy Boyd, you know, he's worked it. You know, he took a long time out before he wrote his book, you know, and talk about the, you know, healing, you know, the inner child and getting past all mm-hmm. that I have to learn to forgive. You know, I'm never going to forget, you know, my relationship with Bonnie, you know, because they know me in Ventura and outside the area. A lot of people don't like me. And what's happened is, like she says, she goes, you know, she says you suffer from asshole-itis, and it's because of everything that's happened to you that makes you who you are, but you're an asshole, you know, but it's because it's the things that happened to me. You know, I remember talking to somebody, and they told me, you know, in regards to what happened to me, and they said back to me when I was a kid, and I can't tell you, they said, you know, like that, you know what, like, you're trying to be agatist to start in trouble, you know, you've always had balls. And I said, no, I didn't always have balls. Today I stand for what's right, and I advocate for those that can't speak. And all I want to do is tell their story, and I want them to get something out of it. You know, the biggest problem that I have now is somebody hit me up, and you know, I have to work on my ego, and I have to keep it focused on God. You know, and I have to realize that I always ask. I always ask the person I'm in a relationship. I said, "Are you proud of me? I did this. Did I do good?" You know, I go back to that, and those are my insecurities. You know, the homeless advocacy. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, when it comes to government officials and stuff like that, you know what? They don't want me around because there's a term that a gentleman uses for me. He says that I'm the moral response to homelessness. You know, and you know, they don't like being put up against the wall, and. You know, I don't have the initials and all that behind my name, but I do know that the people out here on the streets, you know, you have to show some dignity at this point in time. You know, they need outreach. We need a place. We need something. And right now, you know, I told an official the other day, I said, you know what? I said, if I was out here right now, and I said, you were to tell me to hold up my hand, and I said, I couldn't even hold up a finger because there's nobody here for me. I can't even get a shower. And how could there be a God? And I said, you know what? If you had a gun, I said, I'd want you to put one in the chamber. I said, just put it in my hand, because I said, that's how the homeless situation that is out here. You just might as well put a gun in their hand mm-hmm. and pull the trigger. They've been through enough, you know?
Right.
So,
right. Okay. I'm going to stop you right there. We have 5 minutes left, and we got a new panelist on, so I want to give him a chance to speak.
Yeah.
We're going to go to Steve in New Jersey. Steve, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, do you have any questions or comments?
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. That's fine. You can just listen. Okay.
Yeah, I just.
Oops, sorry.
Minutes ago, just listening intently.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Steve. Okay, I'm going to give the panelists a chance to say goodnight. If everybody could just take a minute real quick and say goodnight or a final comment to Lang. Go ahead, Joe in Oregon, my co-host.
Thank you so much, Lang. I have learned a lot from you, and I appreciate you sharing. Thank you, and bless you.
Bless you. Bless you.
Thank you. Okay, Val in New Jersey.
Hi, Lang. I just thank you so much for telling your story, and I just want to tell you that I think you're a beautiful person, and I'm going to be praying for you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Val. Okay, Mary in Alaska.
I'll just say I'm proud of you, Lang, and good night.
Yeah. Thank you, ma'am.
Mary.
Can I say one more
thing? Okay, Lang. Sure, you got 2 minutes. Go for it.
You know, there's a, in regards to that, whatever we do, nobody knows but me. You know, they wanted me to change the title. Nobody knows but me. You know, I have a lot of people in my life, and I said, I'm not changing the title of whatever has come. The story Nobody Knows But Me is about each and every one of us. It's between us and God. Nobody knows but me. You know, there's a part in the song that God only knows. It says, only the lonely and the ashamed, the misunderstood. And you know what? The ones are to blame. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It comes to the point that we have to start blaming ourselves. You know, and God knows how it's killing you, and God knows the real you. I thank you all for inviting me on the show.
Well, we have about a minute and a half left before I have to put the song on. So I just want to say how I am just so impressed by how you took your trauma and your pain and all the unfortunate things you had to go through, and you turned it into a purpose, and a purpose that is such an eye-opening thing to advocate the way you're advocating. How would anyone know what they're suffering with if you had not spoken it tonight? I mean, who else is speaking it?
Nobody, ma'am.
That's nobody. It, exactly. And you're the only voice out there, correct?
Yeah, this, yes, ma'am. As far as my voice, there's voices behind my voice to take guidance, but a lot of people, and it's okay. You know, somebody made a comment, her name's Tina Love. We're going to be doing a documentary called A Moment of Clarity. And Tina Love made a comment and said that Lang Martinez is my validation in regards to what it takes to get out of homelessness and the resources that are needed to get your life back on track. And I know she's listening. I love you, Tina. And I have people a lot, you know, from May 9th to now, you know, there's quite a bit of stuff on me. I think my stories goes up to 8. I think there's a total of something as far as my advocacy. I mean, as far as, the newspapers and stuff like that here and outside. And, I tell people, a lot of people that are behind the scenes and stuff like that, you know what? I don't care. I don't care what you think about me. You know, they say, somebody said I'm the moral response to it. That's an honor. His name's Mark Alvarado. But one of the things is this, is that I have a platform. And if you have to put me on a milk carton, and if it helps somebody, you know, don't be like Lang. You know what? So be it. You know, and whatever
okay.
needs to be
well,
done.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. We have to stop there. And Lang, you were a wonderful job. Awesome job. We thank you so much. Lang Martinez from Oxnard, California. And this will be recorded. Please visit us at NASCA.org for all our resources. Thank you. I am Linda V from New Jersey, and good night.
Bye.
I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.